On today's episode of Chapters.
Why does Sailor Moon create such a following?
Because it's the best thing ever.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/chapters. There you'll find over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Welcome to Chapters, the podcast where we hear the stories of readers' lives through the books that have meant the most to them. I'm Mary Mahoney, and today my guest is Marissa Hicking. Marissa is the teen librarian at Avon Free Public Library in Avon, Connecticut. On this episode, we talk loving horse books, sci-fi, fantasy, linking our memories of books to the places we read them, the path to becoming a librarian, and more. This is Marissa's story. Thanks so much for being on the show. It's so great to have you here.
It's my pleasure to meet you telephonically. And most people that know me know I love to tell stories, and I love to tell stories about books. So this is kind of actually a gift for me. So thank you.
Thank you. So maybe we'll start by having you tell us a little bit about where you're from and maybe some of your earliest memories of reading.
Sure. So I will warn you, I talk a little fast. I'm going to really concentrate on talking slow. I was born in Iowa. My parents are from a small town in Wisconsin. They were like high school sweethearts. And then they had my sister in California. 6 years later, they had me in Iowa. And then we moved to Connecticut because my dad's in insurance. And then he stayed there through different jobs. So if I have a little bit of Midwestern, like, oh, hey, you know, don't you know, that slips in every once in a while. I love it. I like it. So I had an older sister, and I will say our book tastes were probably totally different. And also we were 6 years between. So when I was, and she was 13, so she wanted nothing to do with me. We have a great relationship now. But the whole point of me mentioning my parents grew up in Wisconsin is all our family was from the Midwest. So my really earliest memories of reading are always, long car trip in a van. We had a Volkswagen Vanagon from the 80s. The first one was blue, and then that one died. And then we had the maroon one, which eventually caught on fire the day after I graduated high school, but we saved the high school diploma. Mom wasn't supposed to run back, but she saved it. But this
was
pretty
much
the
van caught on fire immediately after your high school graduation.
Yeah, it was a day trip the day after graduation with my two grandmothers and my aunt and my mother and my father and my uncle. I didn't go for some reason, but the engine is in the back of the Volkswagen.
Sure.
So, and they were like, don't run back. Like they had their shoes off, but my mom ran back for the purses and my high school diploma that was still there from the previous day. So thanks, Mom. Thanks a lot.
Wow.
So in my childhood, I really imagined this Volkswagen Vanagon, the two of them. And it was kind of the party bus, and it was always the thing that got us to school and activities. But every summer we'd drive about 25 hours, and my dad would only drive. It was the rule. And they'd put us to bed, and they'd wake us up in the middle of the night, like 1 or 2 a.m., but not really wake us up and just put us into like sleeping bags in the van. There was an actual bench seat, and then I always slept on the floor because I was a little one, because there was a table you could put up. It probably wouldn't be legal today. But that was, you'd wake up, you'd already be like 6-7 hours on the road. You'd have like egg salad sandwiches and like handy wipes. And it was just the windows kind of cracked. It was that summer feeling. You're about to see your family. So that was every summer from before I can remember to probably through high school. And my parents, they created a game for me called the horse game. Because as you've talked about previously on the show, everybody, well, not really. Lots of girls love horses. So they wanted me to stop reading because I just would always read. They're like, look outside the window, enjoy the view. But really I was traveling so far in the van, just in every world of my book. And I would reread my favorite books, and like the cows don't count. That's a rule. When you're going to Wisconsin, the cows don't count. It has to be a horse. And once you see like a llama or an alpaca, you have to establish the ratio of horses to that animal. You can't claim it then because it's a rare animal. It's a very elaborate game. But that was the only way they got me to look up for my books.
And are you remembering at this, when you're thinking about this time in your life, are you remembering the kinds of books you were reading?
I don't remember the earliest titles, but I do remember certain ones sticking out, like obviously Tommy DePaula and like Streganona. Mm-hmm. I lived for that. I love, well, first of all, I love food. So an unending pasta bowl is amazing. I always liked imaginative or really funny books. Hmm. And I'm sure I got it from one of the Scholastic book fairs, which is awesome.
Yeah.
My life.
I mean, describe for any listeners who've never been to a Scholastic book fair, what was it and why was it so important when you were in school?
It was so important in school because I don't really remember going to the bookstore. I remember going to the library a lot, but it was something that it just was always the newest, shiniest, brightest. It was, you got the little catalog to mark in and it came to you. And it was just one of those things that anything felt possible. And how many books could you talk mom into? Like, this is your good behavior book. This is a book for, I don't know why. Like, oh, I'll do this if you let me do this. Okay. You know, and there was a limit. I couldn't get everything. It was a magical thing that came. And I was the kid that lived for it. You know, once I probably wasn't good at reading. I love a good sale. But also, I like reading and a bargain. I still do, actually. I'm pretty cheap, but I still want to read books, and I do. I love all the ways that I find ways to get books for free and before they're published. So it just was a magical thing. It was like one of the best weeks of school, which kind of shows how awesome a nerd I was, I guess. Other books that I have, this actually predates the book fairs. This is like a beginning reader book, but I found this at a used bookstore. I think possibly the Book Barn in Niantic, which everyone should go to multiple times a year. Mm-hmm. Because there's cats and it's outside. Again, used books. And I sell a lot of used books that I'm like, I like this, but I don't love it. So I'm going to put it in the universe for other people. But I found this book for $1. And it's actually one of my favorite books. It's Socks for Supper by Jack Kent. Hmm. And yeah, he has simple drawings. And I was trying to think this morning, why do I love it so much? I think because one of the characters, the main character, looks like my grandpa, which actually looks like how my father looks now as a grandfather to my sister's children. It's not a Gift of the Magi story. It's a farmer and his wife. They're poor. They live next door to a younger man and wife who have a cow, and they envy that they have no cheese and butter. All they have is turnips, and they're totally tired of turnips. So they find an old pair of socks, and they trade it to the farmer of the cow. And they have butter and cheese and milk, and it's amazing. And then they're like, oh, it's gone. What can we do? She says, I can knit. So he has a big red sweater. So she keeps using the yarn from his sweater to knit more and more socks, and his sweater gets tinier and tinier as they get the food. And then finally, it's wintertime, and they have no more yarn in his sweater. So he brings it to the farmer, and he's like, actually, that's perfect. And the wife of the farmer with the cow has taken all the yarn and made a red sweater, but it's too big for her husband when she gives it to him. And then has a little scarf on, and he's topless. And she decides to give him the sweater because he didn't have one. So now everyone is happy because there was a gift of giving, and they had the milk and cheese. And they're kind of right back where they started. So it could be this whole cycle, possibly. I don't know. It's so simple. It's very primary colors with yellow and blue. And it's just simple artwork. But I don't know if there's technically a moral of the story that, like, don't eat turnips, but go for cheese and milk. But I still love it because it's funny. As a little wry turn to the end, we were like, oh, it's not what I expected. But it worked out well in the end.
So that does sound like a great book. I need to check that out. I'm wondering, going back, what is your earliest sense of connecting with books besides the best friend book that you really felt like you connected to on a personal level?
I was really into historical fiction, and I was really into fantasy, but pretty much anything with a horse or a unicorn. Like, a lot of girls like horses, but obviously they like unicorns. I loved unicorns. Like, I was the unicorn queen, because obviously you could quickly turn a horse into a unicorn. Not sure when I got it, but I have this. It's probably a little bit older. Like, I might have got it when I was 9 or 10, but it's by Jane Yolen, which she has a an amazing body of work for teens, kids, even some adults can read it. But there's this one called Here There Be Unicorns. Like, just looking at it, it has a beautiful close-up on the cover of a unicorn's face and its horn, and it has the forelock kind of almost covering the eye. And it's all the pictures are, they're not in color. They're in like pencil drawing shades of white, gray, almost even black, if you can get it there. And it's long, short stories. I know she had previously done a Here There Be Dragons, which I've never looked at, never touched, never had an appeal to me. But this is a, probably about 15 stories of different unicorns. It could be a couple modern ones, could be a short poem, could be like six pages. It has illustrations. Like, if it had unicorns, I was down. I was down for it.
What drew you to unicorns?
They're magical and they're beautiful.
Okay.
And they're... well, because first of all, I like to draw them, and I any kind of horse kind of horse book. If it had a horse, I was in it. I was into
and were
Saddle
you,
Club.
Oh yeah, we had another guest on this show talk about Saddle Club.
I listened to that episode very deeply, and I was like, I will connect with you. Oh, and Thoroughbred Ashley. That was a book fair book. That was a Scholastic book fair book. Ashley, I read all of those.
What do you think the appeal is for young girls of horse books, or in your case, too, unicorn books? Like, what's going on there?
It's so magical, because even just a horse seems magical in the way it moves, because you could have a cat, you could have a dog, of which I think at the time I didn't, but then eventually we got a black cat. But it was just something, it's something for me, it was out of reach. I went riding like once in Connecticut. My parents set that up. And then in Wisconsin, there was a horse farm between my parents. My parents grew up in two neighboring towns of like the population was 500 each at the peak. And they had the highest graduating class when they graduated in 1969. And it was 50 something people. But there's a horse, right? That's how small it was. There was this horse farm between. And so when you play the horse game, you always know what side that's on. So I went on a ride a couple summers in a row. And the funniest actually was when my Aunt Jane was still alive and my other Aunt Susie was there. It was like all the aunts and cousins and uncles went on this horse ride because crazy Marissa was into horses and let's go on it. So I think it was my Aunt Jane's horse pooped and the tail flicked it into my Aunt Susie's mouth.
Oh my God.
I found that really funny as a 9-year-old because also it didn't happen to me. But so that's not a graceful, beautiful moment, but I still loved it. Like I would totally have risked
not pooping them. That might be the most horrifying thing I've ever heard on this show.
I'm so sorry.
No, I mean, in a way it's like you deserve a medal of some kind. I mean, wow.
You should have. Aunt Susie should have gotten it. I mean, it was something, it's almost like when you're a kid, if you like something and people know that about you and they reinforce it, like my niece for a while, I'm not sure if she still does, she liked pigs. So if someone knows that you like something, they might buy in more and more of it. But I was totally fine with that for horses because I just liked the stories. I liked the realistic stories. I loved it when the character of the horse could talk and fantasy stories. Like I just was in. It was something that was a very easy, I just think, I don't know. And it's like that. I still feel like, oh, there's a horse. You know, if you could pet the muzzle of a police horse, like on the street, you'd be like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. It's gifting me with a soft muzzle. Then again, I love animals. So I'm like, oh my God, the cat is gifting me with putting its little paw on my hand. So I guess.
So
I could go
whatever way. What do you think when you're turning to horse books or whatever's going on in that time, how do you think that's informing your sense of yourself when you look back on that time of your life?
I was super shy, which is probably not crazy to say. I was actually so shy, I was always afraid to raise my hand. Like there, throughout most of middle school and probably most of high school, I often knew the answer to things, but I wouldn't raise my hand. I might be like 42, like under my breath, but I just of raising my hand. And that's something that I was so painfully shy that I'm sure a lot of people found solace in animals because, you know, even now as an adult at a party, if it's like, oh my God, is there a dog? You're like, oh, hey, whatever, adults, let me pet the dog. You know, you still have that, you know, you don't need to be verbal. You can still, that's an actuality. It's just, it feels safe. It feels good if they like you. If they don't like you, sorry about it. That you can always go to that connection. Or even if at a party there's like a kid, they're not an animal, but I'll play with that kid and I'll be like, whatever. And they're like, do you want to babysit? And I'll be like, no. But, but it's that whole connection, I think, with animals or kids that, you know, I don't want to be adults right now. I want to have fun. So a way in to tie it back to my books and reading, I think it was also just, you know, that you can always call, even if there's no verbal thing, versus I probably wasn't the most social. I was terrified of talking to people that I didn't already know. Like, once you got to know me, I would not shut up. And I would be like, ha, 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 I've been funny. And this was something I really worked on a lot in college and after, especially with my career. It's just somehow I don't care. Like, I do a lot of public speaking in front of teenagers or just every day. And if you have no shame, you don't feel shame, and you just do weird stuff and you embrace it. But this is something I never would have done as a teenager or preteen. I would have died in mortification. So yeah, animals, they're safe. Humans, not safe. Not safe. Because they can make fun of you, versus an animal is like, feed me or don't, but I'll take the pets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's my long roundabout answer to say, yeah.
No, it makes sense. I mean, I'm wondering then, so how old are you about when you're reading the horse books and the unicorn books?
Did I ever stop reading? No.
Wow. Great point. Great point. I guess I'm just wondering where you go next in your reading life. So let's say the horse books and the unicorn books continue, which makes sense because there's never a wrong age to read a unicorn book, let's imagine.
Thank you.
Where do you go next?
Well, I read a lot of fantasy. I just, you know, there's books you read as early chapter books. I can't remember. I know a lot of people now would say Magic Tree, but I don't remember those early chapter books specifically. I'm sure they're full of horses. Then I, like I said, I read Here There Be Unicorns, and then I transitioned up to thicker chapter books, like the actual kids fiction. An easy transition was Marguerite Henry, the super classic, again, horse book. Like, though my real favorite was King of the Wind, which was a standalone about the boy who was a mute. He couldn't speak, and he had this one foal born, and there he had a both auspicious sign and an inauspicious sign. And eventually it was their journey, which eventually got them to England, and he eventually was, I think, one of the Godolphin founders of the Arabian line, one of the main thing. I actually have a discarded library copy, and it was all the artwork. The artwork could always draw me in, because no matter what, when you're a kid, you like pictures. And this is before the beautiful graphic novel renaissance we're in right now for kids, for comic books. So I love the pictures that could always get me. So that was, I read, you know, Justin Morgan Had a Horse, Born to Trot, all of those, San Domingo, just anything with her on it, I did it. And I found Thoroughbred, and I found Saddle Club. Saddle Club was, as you've heard before, more modern setting. And it was three girls, and everybody could identify with one of the girls in the club. There was Stevie, the outgoing one, blonde. I liked reading her story, but I found in with her. There was Lisa, the as you mentioned, like the I can't afford writing. There's always one character that can't afford writing. And then I forget the other one's name, the one who was an Army or Air Force brat, and she was the best with horses, and she was soft-spoken, and she had beautiful black hair that was curly, but I forget her name. I'm sorry. I think Lisa and the other one, I kind of found solace in like the quietness of them, and like you can always go back to their horse relationship. But eventually with like King of the Wind, it was a horse book, but I could tie it back with historical fiction, and I got into historical fiction. My mom was a big reader. Oh, I forgot to mention that. My mom was a big reader. She always wanted to read, but she always felt, would say like, there's not enough time, or she would fall asleep reading at night.
So did she think it was a luxury for her as a mom? And I don't know if your mom worked outside the home. Certainly working inside the home is also real work. Mm-hmm. But did she feel, my mom is like this too, where she kind of thinks reading during the day is a privilege that doesn't belong to her.
I mean, my mom always needs a setting. She needs like the proper setting for her. So they always say you need a good parent to have a modeling behavior. If you have a model behavior, then your kids will read. So my mom would read, it was like vacation luxury, of which she prides herself that like she didn't take her for 30 years and she just broke it last month. She had took one day off because if her kids got sick, she's like, I had to take a sick day, but that was not her sick day. So 30 years, same company, same eye office, eye care office. So she's like Wisconsin tough. But you know, they're not giving you an award for that. So it's up to you. It's okay. When she has the time on the weekend to go outside and read by the pool, that's her like mini vacation. Like she's not doing the work. She's not doing the this. Cause my parents like to party. They drink more than I do. It's fun. Right. I got out partied by my grandmother at her 90th birthday party in Wisconsin.
How did she out party you?
I was so tired. It was like 1 a.m. We had her surprise birthday at party. Like we came in from Connecticut to Wisconsin and now she's passed on and I'm diabetic and she was diabetic, but she out partied me. Like I was like, Grandma, I'm so tired. I gotta go to bed.
Grandma, I'm so tired. Yeah. Wow. I mean, was she sympathetic or was she kind of like, hey?
Oh, she was in the carry on party. She had lived in this town for, she actually came from England in World War II. She was a war bride. And she,
oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I love my family. I love their history. I love talking about it. And I can picture my family or family members in different points in history. So I super embraced historical fiction.
And are there books that you particularly connected with at different times when you were trying to understand maybe your family's history or your own life at a different point?
Kind of, but also I will say I'm stubborn. So sometimes like my mother was a reader. She could read in the van when I was reading, she read by the pool. I will just say, I love my dad. He is not a reader at all. I bought him a couple books in his life. He's not a reader. But I love him. He's a great guy. It's just not his thing. So my mom oftentimes would suggest titles that she grew up loving. And she loved the Little House in the Prairie books. And she's like, this, you know, this is in Wisconsin. Read this. This is not my life, but you can do this. But I got very stubborn and said no. And I've since read the first two, but for some reason I love history, but I was very stubborn. And again, I just said that whole story about how my family in Wisconsin, and I was like, no, I don't want to read that. So I'm also a jerk. But I will often find something similar that I find myself. So the book that I super loved and embraced was Caddy Woodlawn. I think by Caroline Brink. I'm looking at it. I have a It's just like, if you love Little House on the Prairie, you're going to love this one. So it's a girl, I think in Wisconsin, she has red hair. It has illustrations in it. There's problems with surrounding Native Americans, but there's really not a problem. There's a white settler's prejudice against. There's a poor family that they are friends with and friendly with. And they're known as the half-breeds, not PC at all. yeah, it's terrible. But, you know, it's this whole little red handkerchief and then someone gets sick and all these things. And that one, I felt like I could own that story. Like you told me to like Little House on the Prairie. I owned my liking of Caddy Woodlawn. And I often will recommend that one to people when I was in the books. I worked 7 years as a kids manager in a bookstore before I was a librarian for kids, teen librarian, now all teen. But I do kids too. So I find my own way to like things. Another book, sometimes also it's where I am, like location wise, it's the book that I read there either was enhanced or something. It was a click. Another historical fiction, which is not historically accurate really at all. I mean, is a Constance, A Story of Early Plymouth by Patricia Clapp. It's so white settler perspective, but at the time I loved it. It was written in 1968. It looks like initially, so it was a girl, she wasn't a Puritan, but she was on the boat to Plymouth, what was originally Plymouth. And then they talked about the settlers on the boat and the sickness. And some of the key characters are actually based on real people. And some people are kind of made up. Hers was just like a 1960s white person romance. It wasn't romance. I know, Betsy Pittman. I, by the way, I used to work with Betsy Pittman. Hey, Betsy. I loved her.
Former guest on this show. That's right.
I love listening to Betsy going on. So there's real people. So, yes.
When did you read that book?
I remembered, well, it's so much more where I read it. I read it in Maine. My dad's cousin's ex-wife. We used to go up in Maine in trips. And I used to get on a sled behind like a four-wheeler or something. That was very rare. It was very fun though. But after they were divorced, we never really saw Diane. And then this is the one trip we did. And I just happened to have this book from my local library. And it was this whole Puritan living in like a dirt floor house. And she was not a fan of this. But in Diane's house, this house she now lived in by herself, she had dried flowers and dried spices, like or things hanging from her ceiling. Think about it. There was like a field of wildflowers outside her house. We never visited again. But it was just such so much the place I was in. I think I was probably 12. So much so that I remembered the feel of this book many years later. And I was actually, I remembered something about Plymouth and I searched probably for a couple of months. I didn't get my librarian skills on at that point. Like I wasn't as great as I am now in finding that hard book. And I found a used copy. So the copy that I have right now in my hands was like a probably used copy. The cover is kind of lame. It looks like a terrible profile picture. She looks, it's terrible cover. But it was $4.95 way back in the day. And the story is not as great as I remembered as the feel that I did at the time, where it felt like I was in a house that could have been like a modernish version of her house, you know, because the floors weren't dirt, but it felt like you have a quilt on extra at night. So just that, the where I was influenced so much more my memory of it and how I liked it. So I guess a lot of times I can remember where I listened to a certain audiobook or where or how or anything like that.
Were you listening to audiobooks around the same time?
Never. Then? No. I only got into audiobooks in the last, and podcasts even in my commute in the last 3 years. It was never something I really considered. I retain information better. I can kind of tell you which page it's on. And that's the problem I have with ebooks, is I like to know how much I have left in the book and how much I have left in the chapter. I need to be spatially aware. So I actually have a harder time remembering. I have no idea how to spell people's names when I listen to an audiobook. And I'm like, I sound like an idiot. Cause I'm like, well, their name is so-and-so. And can I spell it? I'm like, no, but I've accepted that. I'm okay with that. No.
So around the time you're reading this book about the girl coming over in the Mayflower, what other kinds of things are you imagining? And what kind of person are you at that point? What kind of 12-year-old or teen even?
I am very quiet. I love to draw. Like if anybody in my middle school thought to think of me, I had my close group of friends. I was in the art club. I did softball. I just was happy. I was always happy with my life. I just knew I wasn't like a social butterfly, but I was kind of fine with it because I had books. Like my books were my friends and my world and my experiences. And I lived. I wasn't like shut in the closet, but I really think I needed much more than that.
And are you using the books to connect with anyone in your life at that time, or is it kind of your private world? Like, do you think with your sister, even though your sister's older, you're having conversations about books or with your parents or with friends at school, or is it really just something you use to color your own imagination?
I think I had conversations with myself and my own imagination. I like to do a lot of hypotheticals or what if this happened or what if that happened. And I think my mom would have been patient and listened to me. My sister would have had none of it.
So where do you go next in your reading life? Where do you want to take us next?
Well, I went through thicker historical fictions. Like I will also mention Letters from Rivka by Karen Hess. Amazing. Mm-hmm. I read that to pieces. I think the copy I have now is a replacement because I read that. Avi is a great author. He wrote 8 million books. He has a large catalog and he's only kept writing. And actually the sad story is for Avi. Have you read any Avi?
I have, a long time ago. You're going to have to reorient me.
But he's written everything. The True Story Confessions of Charlotte Doyle is a girl who disguised herself. Well, she disguised herself as a guy mm-hmm. when she was supposed to be crossing the sea. The cover's so romance novel, even though it's not really a romance. It's the wind blowing her all down hair because her parents went first. She found her own life and her own choices. And I lived it. I loved it. But Avi, the sad story with him is that's not his real name, obviously, but he didn't want to bring dishonor or shame his parents by being an author and writing books. So that's why he wrote under the name Avi, which you think that, right, with the amount of writing he's done, the amount of awards he's won, you'd think that, yeah, I'm Avi, bitch. You know, like, I'm amazed. I mean, hopefully they perspectives on it and maybe it was misunderstanding, but I was like, oh. But I still carried on reading my historical fiction, and I lived for, and this is something my mom and I did agree on. She gave me her Anne of Green Gables books.
Oh, wow. That's big.
Yes. Oh, I lived it. So I have these like $295 each is how old they are. And there's, oh, and actually, but you know what I will say is the first one has the cover of the PBS show.
Oh,
the movie,
yeah.
Of Anne of Green Gables, which that was one thing. My mother, my sister, and I would always drop. Like if there was any PBS marathon, we would skip the marathon, like the asking for money part, but we would live. We'd be like, whatever we're doing, we are watching this. Like, and I loved Anne of Green Gables, and I loved Anne of Avonlea, and I loved Anne of the Island. I read the other three in the main set, and I even read Rilla of Ingleside and Anne of Rainbow Valley. I didn't like those as much, like I'm sure most people did, because you know what happens when your main character grows up and becomes a mother, kind of like Thoroughbred. You know, Ashley eventually became a mom in that book. But then these are books that I read to pieces. Like I read, and I did so much rereading as a kid that I have almost no time for now. Like now it feels that like rereading is an indulgence that I have for.
And why, when you reread a book when you were a kid, what were you hoping to get out of it?
You just, it was like, why would you eat the same meal over and over again? Cause it's your favorite.
Yeah.
It was all that you knew. I liked knowing what was coming. You knew the pacing. You could savor those moments that were coming up when Gilbert would dip her pen or whatever, and then her and Diana and getting drunk on the cordial or whatever. and then Matthew would die, you'd be utterly shattered. And why?
Be like, did you ever cry? Did you ever cry at those moments?
Yes. So much. So even in the movie, the one that we'd watch, you knew it was coming, but it was an honest emotional reaction that you had. And I will cry.
Have you ever sought out a book that you've read before because you want to cry? And so, you know, like this book has something in it that makes me emotional.
Not often. I know I've sought out. There's one book that I keep on my bedside that I break out because it's so bad, because I know I'll fall asleep within 5 minutes of reading it.
What's the book?
So that's the Breaking Dawn.
Oh, God.
And the reason I actually own it is a funny story I can get to later when I get to my Barnes & Noble
days.
Sure, so that's not a cry reaction at all. But I don't think I thought it out. It's just usually I would just reread everything because I think I just needed to. My mom couldn't go to the library as often as I'd want. I did have a period where I was into joke books. I don't have any joke books now. I'm not really into. I like puns and stupid jokes, but I'll say for anyone that feels like they lost a lot of library books and the librarians are mad at you, it's okay. I had a run where I lost 3 joke books in a row and I have no idea where they really were. And now as a librarian, I'm always like, check beside your bed, check under the car seat in the car. Even if you think they're not there, they probably are. I don't have bad feelings about it, but I became a librarian, so it's okay. And you can too. We're cool.
So how did you get to be a librarian? I mean, I don't want to jump too many years here, but what is your path? So you mentioned that you worked at Barnes & Noble. Yeah. Take us on the journey.
So I always loved to read, and my sister played volleyball and softball. So in many ways I played volleyball and softball because the path was already established, but I really love volleyball. But at her games, a lot of her friends' parents were like, I don't even know what your face looks like because your face was always in a book, because I always had a book. Like Roald Dahl, like the BFG or Matilda, or the one I really resonated with was like Danny, Champion of the World. I didn't fiction, even though I am overall a fantasy sci-fi kind of girl. I always was reading. So eventually, and I was really hesitant to go to college. I didn't really embrace the whole process. I didn't race to leave. My sister wanted to go as far as she could, so she went to Vermont. I was like, well, possible choice. So I only applied to 3 colleges. I said, I'll go for English. So I applied to one small private college in Massachusetts, you know, no in-state tuition, and I got waitlisted. So any financial aid would have been gone by the time I got there. So I was like, no, thank you. And I got into Quinnipiac, but I went to a podiatrist, and he was a homeopathic thing. It did not work for me, but the one good thing of advice he gave me was, oh, what are you going for? And I was like, well, English. She's like, oh, so they're only great for nursing and journalism. It's a waste of your money if you go there. And I was like, well, thank you. Literally, that was the only good thing, because he took 6 months to try and get rid of a wart I had in my foot. I'm honest. I have a wart.
Still there.
No, actually, the scar is still there, because it took 6 months for him. He was like, try these sugar homeopathic pills and it'll go. And I was like, this doesn't sound... But I could barely walk on my foot by the end. I got it from in high school. I volunteered at Instruction of the Handicap swimming lessons in the inside pool that was really gross at our high school. So that's how I got the wart. So,
oh, man.
Good cause. I still have a scar. And I actually, it was like an, I'm so gross. It was like a nickel size when he had to remove it because he waited so long. But thank you for telling me about Quinnipiac. So in the end, I went with UConn up in Storrs. I figured in-state tuition. And everyone was like, oh, do you want to be a teacher? No, I thought that was way too much pressure. I don't want to be in charge of, like, what if I didn't teach? I didn't do this. And then I knew I just wouldn't like that lifestyle. But I was still English major, which you really should have a goal of what you're going to do. I described myself as more of a reading major. Everyone, even now, was like, oh, don't you want to write? You read all these stories. You have all these ideas. No. I hate writing. I get very uppity about it because I want to make sure I do it correctly. And grammar, I'm not the best at grammar at all. No. My husband's better and he wasn't an English major. So I'm like, thanks. good job, though. So I graduated. And then what do you do? So I did a couple of weird short jobs. But by August of the year I graduated, I ended up applying to Barnes & Noble in my hometown. And I remember walking into the store, there was two people who were cleaning the doors on the outside. And first of all, you should always be polite to everybody, especially when you're interviewing. And I was like, thank you. And I was so nice, so polite. And then to the cleaners, you know, you're like, whatever, the cleaner. You're making your first impression. Be nice. And then I got in there and it turns out the people that I had said hello to and was nice to was the assistant manager and the store manager who were cleaning the doors because the cleaner was in Greece visiting his family for the week. So I was like, hey, be nice. So they liked me so much. They made me lead, which eventually the kids manager when they had that position. So I was there for about 7 years total. The last year I went part-time once because I had gotten my master's degree. I worked there for a year. A lot of my friends rushed into getting their master's degree or going to graduate school. And I was like, what do you want to do? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, why are you spending money if you don't know what you want? So I worked for a year and I was like, I kind of like this whole book thing. And I was a kids and teen manager, but I always loved the teen books more. So I really slowly did one class a semester. So three classes a year for 4 years. And they had a program at Barnes & Noble where you could get tuition reimbursement if it applied to your current job, which, hello, librarian, bookseller. I milked that for all it's worth. Thank you very much. And I did it slowly. So eventually I graduated with my master's in library science.
And do you find yourself now thinking, so you're working with teens and you shared before that when you were a teen yourself, you were kind of in your own head and not necessarily the most social butterfly type person. And yet here you are connecting with teens and trying to be social with them. Are you finding that it's easier now as an adult to connect with teens than it was when you yourself were a teen?
Yeah, I don't know that I would have been friends with me. I would have been like, go away from me. I just want my books. Don't talk to me. young me came up to now me and I asked if I deemed to ask for a recommendation, and I now me recommended something good or even a couple good things, then I would have been sold and I would have gone back to now me, because that's the thing. If you give someone, they might not recognize it, but I read different studies and facts. If you give someone three bad recommendations, like, I'm not saying all at once, maybe like, oh, come to me once, come to me twice, they will not come back to you. And I have many people that come back to me. So I'm very proud that they're not mean, but sometimes they're like, oh no, I don't want to talk to you, other person. I want the blonde one. I want that lady. I'm like, oh, well, hopefully they were nice about it. Which is nice. But I really work hard to give them the best I can to get them the book that they want or the book they don't know they need, but that was the book they want, without knowing it. The weird thing is that I read so many historical fiction ones growing up, and then I had such a huge fairy tale. That's a huge part of my life. Hmm. And I read more adult books as a high schooler than I read now, much YA. So I'm like, I don't know. I'm not relieving my youth because I'm cool with my youth, but it's a weird flip. But it's I don't know, man. So the books I read as high schooler me, I read all the Anne of the Islands, did you ever read Andrew Lang's The Fairy Books?
I did not, no.
Have you heard of them?
I've heard of them, yes.
The artwork, again, the pictures, the artwork. I love to draw, so I could draw me a horse, check. I love drawing pretty women in pretty dresses, pretty queens. And I just, my local library, the Manchester Public Library, Mary Cheney Library, which was a building that the Cheneys, I think Mary Cheney donated after her death. So it was like 1910s kind of building. In 1990s, it was still pretty much that, not really renovated much. They put a few more power outlets. I loved going to my library. They had at the time, they had a separate children's entrance, and there every month or so they had a different display, and that sticks with me. Sometimes it was dolls around the world, or learn about this, learn about that. But eventually they bricked up that entrance because there was probably a safety hazard of what if someone's child was stolen. But that makes me sad. I didn't remember what these books, the official name was for a while, but eventually when I worked at Barnes & Noble, I made sure I bought all 12 of them because they have the red fairy, orange fairy book, the yellow fairy book, the gray book, the lilac book, the purple book, the blue book, the green book, the indigo book, all the silver book, all the books. And it's very Eurocentric in the fairy tales. Sometimes they would go a little bit into like Arabian type tales. But you knew the patterns, you knew the foolish young son, you knew the oldest princess, the youngest princess. It was never the middle princess. It was always the oldest is the most fair, or the youngest is the most fair. And there was dragons and creatures, and there was wise animals. And that got my imagination, because I am a super fairy tale girl. And I still love a great fairy tale retelling done well. That will always get me. I love it. So these books, if I allowed myself to reread more, I'd reread them more. And they're a pretty dense print. Consider, they will have pictures, but it's not what you would do now for font and spacing. They'd make it more readable, so the books would probably be thicker. Hmm. But that life, like I did so many drawings inspired by it.
Is that what drew you to fairy tales? Was the opportunity to like dive into the illustrations and draw your own? Was it because you wanted to live in your imagination and you liked where that took you? Like, why fairy tales?
I wanted to know. I know there's the main ones, and then you're like, yeah, but there's the real fairy tales, like Grimm's fairy tales and Perrault. And that those are fun. Like when you're like, wait a minute, who cut off their toe? Who cut off their heel for Cinderella? Who's got their eyes pecked out at the end? That was amazing. I love that, which I don't know if that says something about me. and actually, I remember, again, in that whole situational awareness, my sister went to college in Vermont, and I went to her college bookstore, and they had used books there, and they seemed so fancy, and they seemed so aloof and so academia. And I got The Uses of Enchantment used. I still have it by, I think, Beth Brunheim. And it took the fairy tales and it broke them down. They're like, oh, Little Red Riding Hood, that cloak. They're like, puberty. You know, all that. And that was amazing. I think I was like 12. So that was, I exactly remember where I was, and I still have it. And it just felt so amazing to me. Like, whoa, there's super extra hidden meanings. What else is in here? I was a Disney kid. Little Mermaid is my favorite. But I still love a good fairy tale retelling. Take the story, whether I know it well or not, twist or tell it to me in a new perspective, a new voice. I can find so many fresh things about it. One of my favorites as a kid that I read to pieces almost, it's a little bit easier, is Robin McKinley, who is an amazing kids, teen, and adult author. She wrote Beauty, which my aunt, the one who ate the poop by accident of the horse, she gave it to me. She was a teacher. She had some legit picks. I loved it. And it was it's this beautiful cover with stained glass, and the girl has like falling curls around her. She has like a weird 1920s kind of dress on for the time. And that I loved. Though later on, I learned she wrote, I think, I'm blanking on the name of the adult. She rewrote Beauty and the Beast again, but for an adult audience. I was not as into it because I think the only one I can have from her is Beauty by Beauty, or the retelling of Beauty and the Beast and the fairy tales. And I have, as an adult now in my teen rating, I do have some favorites of fairy tale retellings, which I can get to. But after fairy tales, which I still would read in high school, I definitely went more adult fiction, which is funny because I know there was good books at the time, but now there's so much of a wealth of YA. I kind of wish that I could have read it there now. And I'm like, why did I rush to adult books so fast? And I sometimes feel sad when my teens come in and they're like, I've read everything I can here. I want to go to the downstairs. I'm like, that's fine, but don't forget to come back and visit, you know, the teen books here. Stubborn. My mom gave me Jane Eyre, which I know many people have talked about on this show because it's Jane Eyre.
Where do you come down on Jane Eyre? We've had some hot debate on this show of people who either love it or really hate it.
Well, I will say I've never read Wuthering Heights, so I can agree with that. Never again. I'm gonna follow that tattoo from the other horse girl. thank you. But Jane Eyre, my mom gave it to me, and that was one of my stubborn ones that I was like, no. I think she gave it to me to read when I was 11, and I was like, what am I gonna do with this? This looks terrible. And I wanted nothing to do with it. But when I came around to it, when I think I probably read through everything I had 2 years later or a year or so later, I was like, oh, and it is problematic. I still hate the cousin subplot when after she finds out Mr. Rochester's secrets.
Oh yeah.
That's some bullshit. But, sorry about it, but I feel so bad for her with her life growing up. It's just sad upon sad. But again, you're living vicariously. So you're like, oh, this shit went down. And the copy I have now is the copy my mom gave to me. That literally, again, that it's so soft with wrinkles. Like all the glosses come off. It's like a cracked kind of leather and painting. So really, it's not just a story. It's this copy of the story, which is my copy of the story. I love my books. I love them to death sometimes, but I love them dearly. So this is the one that if you'd ever asked me, probably from the age of 13 up until when I really started working as a teen librarian, that this is one of the two books that I was like, this is like my favorite book. Because I, you know, I loved it. I liked it. I liked the overall child to governess to young woman kind of in love. It was messed up. It wasn't great. But you know, then there was the weird, I still really hate the weird part where I was like, girl, you left your purse in the car. Like, I know you could probably leave your phone in a taxi, but I was like, girl, it's still all you got. And then the way it ended in the end, I'm like, well, I guess someone he paid comeuppance for lying by losing his sight, kind of. It turned out in the end. So I figure I'd probably be more harsh on it now, but I still have those memories. Again, my mother giving it to me and this copy. So I come down less harsh on it.
Maybe we could close by you offering us some recommendations of what you're reading now or something you would recommend that you've read recently.
That would be wonderful. So I do book talks at the middle school once a month, and I do five different genres of books. So I actually pulled some of the books that I've book talked that are my top books that I've read over this year, last year, the year before. If you like sci-fi and fantasy, Warcross by Marie Lu, who's an amazing author in her own right. If you liked Ready Player One, or you will like Ready Player One, it's a female who's a bounty hunter. She's a player. She's a hacker. She's a pawn. She hacks her way into like these VR goggles game that everyone's watching, and she steals an item of power that she has to auction off. And so the game asks her to be a spy in his game competition to figure out who is trying to sabotage it. It also has a rainbow cover, and she has rainbow hair, and she has a hoverboard. So just on that facts alone, you should definitely read it. I do read realistic fiction. I've made more of a read for it this year. If you saw the teen movie Everything Everything, but it was based on a book by Nicola Yoon, who's half Black, half Asian descent. I forget what part. She also wrote another book called The Sun Is Also a Star, which is beautiful. I got the advanced reader copies at the Book Expo a couple years ago. It's a Jamaican-born girl who's been raised most of her life in New York City, and her dad just got arrested for a DUI, and they're being deported at the end of the day. It's like a 24-hour kind of story. And she's trying to do whatever she can not to have to leave. The other half of the story, I think, is a Korean born son. I think first generation or second generation. He's supposed to go to like a Yale interview. But in the end, their paths intersect. And the great thing is that there's one scene where someone almost gets run over by a taxi, but they'll jump into the taxi driver and you get a quick perspective on that person's life. And it has a great ending that's very realistic, but not realistic. But I won't spoil it, but you should definitely read it. So realistic fiction. And then a realistic fiction one that I loved book talking, and it should win. This one is told through three different time periods. 1942, a boy and his Jewish family on a cruise ship eventually heading towards Cuba. Only thing is, Cuba will only take so many Jewish people, and what happens when the boats that come after they fill their quota, they're going to get sent back in 1939. To other places, and that based on a true story. You should read about that. And then another second person is a girl in Cuba in 1991 or 94, where the week where Fidel Castro says, all right, if you had tried to escape last week, we would have shot you. I'm gonna give you 1 week, whatever, a raft or what do you want. We're not gonna kill you. Try and make it to Miami. Either way, you're gonna die or be out of my hair. And she sells her saxophone for gas for this raft. It's like a Fidel Castro metal sign. And then the last story is 2014 in Syria. And it's a boy and his mother, father, and his like infant baby sister trying to get from Syria to Germany by whatever means necessary. And the stories do have some interconnections in the end, which is beautiful. And I even listened to it on audiobook, and it was amazing. And okay, last book, I know I got to stop talking. Fiction. It was gut-wrenching to read because it was real. It's The 57 Bus, a true story by Dashka Slater. It did win, I think, a Stonewall Award at this year's ALA Midwinter. It's two sides of the same crime, two ends of the same line. It's told through instant messengers, emails, different stuff with a lot of nonfiction research because this is a true event. There was in California, Oakland, there's a 57 bus, and these two different teens only had maybe like 7 minutes or 9 minutes riding together on the bus. Totally separate worlds. One is a trans teen, Sasha. They had just come out, and they went to a very liberal, tiny school. Parents were very supportive. And there was Richard, an African-American person who just life was so set against him. Small overlap on the bus. Sasha was wearing a tutu, and then Richard's friends were making fun of Sasha sleeping on the bus. And then someone had a lighter, and then they flicked it, and then the tutu caught on fire. And then it's what happens after. It doesn't vilify everyone exponentially. It gives reasons and stories in a very roundabout way, and it does explore the justice system in a teen nonfiction that's very accessible and topical because it's not just one side of a story. It gives you both sides of it. And okay, one last book, because I lied before. We were supposed to host this author on the day her book debuted last Tuesday. I Stopped Somewhere by T.E. Carter. It's a gut-wrenching book for ages or grades 10 to 12. I even kind of said it's for high school people. The quick summary is Ellie Frias disappeared long before she vanished because in the beginning, it's a book that has sexual assault, just to fully warn you. It's, if you're a fan of Lovely Bones or Beartown, this is the kind of combination. It made me cry. I don't know. And I went from reading this to a fluffy teen book, and I was so jarred that it was hard, but the writing is beautiful. It's a debut work. It's a girl that the most physical assault that could happen to someone happened to her. It's told in flashbacks and flash forwards. Keep reading to a page 100 and then you'll find out why. And it tackles the justice system, and it gives an ending that's realistic but also metaphorical. But the writing will cut your heart out in a really good way, if that helps sum up some of the books. Some of the books you should read that I loved and adored, and I read a lot of books.
These all sound like great recommendations. I've read some of them, and I can totally back you on the ones I've read. The Sun Is Also a Star is a great book. Yeah, it's amazing. I had to send it to someone while I was reading it because I just felt so strongly about it. So I so appreciate all of these recommendations and you sharing your story of your life so far as a reader. It's been wonderful. It really has.
I love it. I want to share what I love with you, with others, and getting that right book in your hands. And it's so much fun. And it's a very addicting. And so I think I found my right job because I like, maybe I didn't like talking to people then, but I love talking to people about books now. So that can be always be a great common ground. Even if you hate books and you're like, I have to read for school, I'll find a way to get you that right book or give you three books and let you choose between them.
That's great. It is like you've come full circle. Before you didn't want to talk to anyone and now you'll at least talk about books.
I won't shut up about books.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you won't.
I won't.
I'd like to thank our guest, Marissa, for sharing her story with us. I'd also like to thank our technical director, Taylor, for all of her help. You can follow us on Instagram at ChaptersPod. There you'll find shelfies submitted by our guests, including Marissa. You can even check out some of her truly excellent artwork. You can find us on Twitter at ChaptersPod. You can find me at MaryMahoney123 and Taylor at MJTThePhD. Visit our website, www.chapterspod.com, if you'd like to share your story on Chapters. You can also find links to every book mentioned on this and every episode on our website. Follow our page on Facebook and you can get updates on the show and join conversations about each episode with other listeners. If you enjoy our show, please rate and review us in the iTunes store. It really helps listeners find our show. Thanks for listening. For our Chapters listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. If you visit audible.com and sign up for a free 30-day trial, you can download an audiobook for free. Why not check out The Sun is Also a Star by Nicola Yoon? Marissa recommends this book, and I read it and loved it as well. Check it out and tell us what you think. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/chapters. Again, that's audibletrial.com/chapters for your free audiobook. Now let's get back to the show.